From Autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, I'm Kevin Turner, and this is the Autosport National Podcast. Well, last week we talked about the upcoming weekend being one full of action and different variety and different meetings, so it seemed a sensible idea to check in again afterwards and pick out some of those highlights and talk to Group National Editor Stephen Licorice about what he thought about viewing from the new grandstand at Thruxton. This is one of the key things we want to talk about. Not just that, we will talk about other things. So, well, Stephen, let's start with that. I think I don't need to introduce you again. Everyone must know who you are by now. So, yeah, did you get a chance to go to the new Woodham Hill Bank?
Yes, I did. I headed there straight. As soon as I arrived at Thruxton on the Saturday morning, and it's first of all, it's just great that the circuit is continuing to innovate and offer new areas, new viewing points for spectators, and it gave the raised elevated area looking over the club chicane and all the way down towards Church. It gave a completely different perspective to what you've had before. And it was really interesting sort of watching the cars heading into the club chicane, whereas normally you're watching them approaching the corner from the outside or from the inside, but much closer. Whereas this, you've got the whole sense of them, the rear of the cars, that you can really see them under braking going into the club chicane. And it was just really good to see that different perspective. I think so. It's perhaps not my favourite view of Thruxton, but it's a really, really good way of getting a different angle, different perspective to what we're used to, and I think that's brilliant.
Well, that's the thing with Thruxton, isn't it? As we said last week, it's a little bit more limited than some other circuits. So I think it's to be applauded that they've put the effort and, let's face it, you know, some money into giving spectators another option. When I was watching on television on Sunday, I did try and see if I could spot you, but I didn't see you were probably being busy going around the paddock at that point. But it looked like a good place to be.
Yes, definitely.
Probably well placed for, let's face it, some of the more crazy elements of the weekend. Now, we did sort of big up British F4, didn't we, beforehand? But I think we need to talk about the minis first.
Yes.
Before you go into your much more expert analysis from the track, I would say, how did they all get away with that third race and the chicane? Did the steward just go, do you know what, you're all taking the mickey, or just let you get on with it, sort yourselves out? There was cars bouncing over, going either side of the chicane. Oh, no, he forced me off. Get back on the gas. There was all sorts of nonsense going on, which was very entertaining to watch. But I do think probably track limits were abused in the extreme.
Yes. Yeah, I think had there been a hard barrier on the very edge of where the track limits were at the club chicane, I don't think many of the minis would have finished that race, because it was incredible to watch, really. And as you say, those that were taking advantage of the new viewing area would have had a perfect view of much of the action, which was into club, but it was actually at other parts of the circuit as well. And just one sort of further point on the spectator side of things, apparently it was a record 21st century attendance at Thruxton for a touring car event, and it was really good to see just how many people were there, even on the Saturday, despite the miserable weather forecast. And it did get very wet at times. There's still a good number of people there. But yeah, that third mini race was quite incredible, really. You had three drivers managed to break away from the main pack. That was Olivier Algieri, Rhys Hurd, and Dave Fairbrother. And they had their own, so they spent the early part of the race sort of pulling clear of the rest, and then they had their own private battle for the lead, which was constantly changing. And the remarkable thing about this was that Rhys Hurd was in the thick of that fight, despite the fact he had no ABS throughout the whole race. So he was, so perhaps he's excused for some of his misdemeanors into the chicane. But yeah, going back to what you were saying, Kev, about the officials, I think it's very difficult to penalise one driver over any other when there were so many that were taken advantage. No one really gained more of an advantage than anyone else, I think you'd probably say. But they had a fantastic battle. Unfortunately, Fairbrother had a little bit of engine trouble on the final laps. He dropped back a little bit, but the Westbourne teammates, Algerian and Hurd, were going right at it. I think they changed leader four times on the last lap. And in the end, Algerian went around the outside of the chicane. They little bit of contact, bit of bouncing over the curb, cutting the corner, and he just took the win. And he said, he described it as being, it was a case of every man was for themselves in that race. It was just a constant battle throughout, and it was brilliant to watch. But then, so you had one eye on that lead battle, but you're also trying to focus on what was happening further back for fourth, where there was 12 minis were all trying to have the same bit of tarmac throughout the race, and that was just as crazy, just as chaotic. And yeah, it certainly gave all those spectators a memorable race to watch.
Yeah, well, you did say that the minis, this class of minis, would provide perhaps a little bit more entertainment than we saw at Snetton, and you were correct, so fair play on that. Perhaps we were a little bit optimistic with British F4, do we think? Is that a little bit harsh? I mean, certainly if you're Virtuosi, you'd be pretty happy with the way the weekend went, but it certainly was perhaps less mad, let's say, than the minis.
Less mad in some ways, because the first race wasn't really a race at all. Basically, it got red flagged very early on because of a pile up into the club chicane. And then the 10-minute restart, pretty much all of that was behind the safety car after another incident. But yeah, as you said, Virtuosi were the big winner from the event. They scored their first wins in the series for a couple of years, actually, and it was a really, really strong weekend for them. Martin Molnar got a great start in the opener and got into the lead, and then didn't have that much defending to do because most of it was under caution. And then the guest driver for them, Salim Hanna, who's a Colombian who's racing in Italian F4, but is doing this Thruxton event and the Silverstone British GP support race as well. He won the third race again after getting the jump off of over Henry Joslin, who was slow away at the start. Joslin and Molnar had a good battle for second in that race. That was probably one of the best battles of the whole weekend F4 wise. But Molnar got the better of that, and he finished second, so it was a 1-2 for Virtuosi. So really, really strong weekend for them, and Molnar has now moved into the points lead after previous tabletopper Finn McLaughlin had a wide moment at Village in the third race, which dropped him back to eighth, and has just dropped him a few points behind Molnar. And then it was Leah Robinson that won the middle race. The middle race, we talked before on the podcast about the relative lack of support races, but that was on Saturday. That was it was a positive because it meant that they could wait around an hour or so for the real heavy rain to stop and the circuit to dry out a bit, and then still get the F4, the middle F4 race in at the end of the day, which... They were, given what the conditions were like, people weren't taking too many chances. But Robinson made two good moves at the complex on Chase Fernandez and Thomas Behrmann to take the win. So, yeah, not thrilling races, I think it's fair to say, not compared to usual single-seater at Thruxton affairs, but there were still some good battles here and there to keep an eye on.
And there's a little bit of a gap opening up, isn't there? Molnar and McLaughlin, and we've got a bit of a gap over the rest. But I suppose we're not even really at the halfway stage yet. We've got Alton Park to come and then the non-championship British Grand Prix support race. So would I be being unfair to ask you to put your money down on someone at this point?
Well, I think at this point in time, I'd have to say I have to go for McLaughlin just because he's still getting up to speed in the car. He's really... coming on leaps and bounds. He had a little moment in qualifying where he spun, and that put him a bit further back on the grid. He didn't get a chance to improve right at the end of the session. And I think he's obviously got the backing of Red Bull, and he's clearly a very talented driver. And if he can be a little bit more consistent, cut out a few of those little errors, I think he'll be the one to beat, really. But having said that, there's plenty of other drivers that are more than capable of getting themselves in the mix. And if Molnar can keep having good, consistent weekends like that, then he's going to be right up there at the end as well.
Yeah, it's not really settled down into a pattern yet, has it? Well, let's the other support category of the British Touring Cars at Thruxton was the Porsche Carrera Cup. We said beforehand that they sound pretty awesome, and Will Martin's had a bit of an up and down season, hasn't he? He's been there or thereabouts for a long time now in Porsches, and this weekend he seemed to really get back, and he's sort of chipping away at getting himself back into championship contention, isn't he?
Yeah, very much so. He won the opening race at Donington Park, but then was had contact at the very start of the second race, and he was also out early on at the first race at Snetterton. So he's not had the most straightforward of starts to the season, but he was really back on form here. And the first Thruxton Carrera Cup race was an interesting one, because Martin was on the tail of Andrew Rackstraw pretty much from very early on, and it was lap after lap he was getting as pretty much as close as he could get to another car in a Porsche without hitting them, and it got down to just the final couple of laps, and it was a case of actually, is he going to be able to make the move for the win? But he did. Rackstraw was a little bit wide exiting the complex, and then Martin went around the outside of Noble to take the lead and go on to win. A brilliant move, and it was wasn't perhaps the most eventful of races, but it was really good to watch because it was so close between the two of them. You were just waiting to see if Martin was going to be able to make that move, and he did. He made a really good clean pass, and then he was third in the second race. He was stuck behind another century driver in that one. This time it was Angus Whiteside, but couldn't quite find a way past that time, so he had to settle for third, and we ended up with another new winner in the shape of Sid Smith. So that's now three new winners from the past four races.
Yeah, it's brilliant, isn't it, to have that number of winners. I mean, I always think with the Porsches, you're not going to get loads of overtaking. You're not going to get a race like the mini race that we were just talking about. But when you get a move like that for the lead, like, you remember it better. I mean, let's face it, going around the outside there didn't work for everyone at the weekend in other categories. So, no, fair play. But he was, I think we're championship-wise, he's kind of in that group, isn't he? For Rackstraw's got a little bit of a gap, and then it's basically everyone else in second.
Yes.
So
yes.
If Martin can keep that going, he could maybe bridge that gap. It'd be interesting to see if he can still do it, because obviously he's still got 10 races to go, so plenty of time.
Yeah, and we saw last year when George Gamble won the title, so he came from quite how many points far the drift he was at the midpoint of the season, but it was quite a long way back. So it has been done before, and it is possible. And certainly more strong weekends like Thruxton for Martin, he'll be right in the mix. And he did say afterwards that he didn't think he'd ever waited so long just to make one overtake in a race before, but it was well worth waiting for to finally get that move done.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, any more thoughts from Thruxton before we look at some of the other meetings from around the country?
I think the sort of overriding thought was just it was great to see some good racing in front of a really big crowd at Thruxton, and it's an interesting time for the circuit with its rebranded Thruxton Retro event coming up in a couple of weeks. So that's another chance to. If you missed out last weekend, it would be another opportunity to use that new Woodham Hill viewing platform and get those spectacular views of the club chicane. And that event as a whole has been sort of revamped for this year with a lot of different off-track entertainment added, as well as the close on-track, the usual mix of nice historic categories that form the part of it. So that should be another good event at Thruxton in just a couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's got a good event. The Thruxton is always worth going along to, isn't it?
Well, there was plenty going on at Thruxton. As we've said beforehand, there was lots of other events taking place last weekend, including the American Speedfest at Brands Hatch, and I believe that's where you were, Kev.
I went over to the Speedfest, which is not perhaps my the sort of event I would normally head to, given everyone knows I like even older kit than normally. The Euro NASCAR is quite unusual, for example. Although, obviously, the race I was looking forward to the most was the Ford versus Chevy race. We were a bit unlucky to start with because we lost two of the top four qualifiers before the start, including Chad Donner's Ford Mustang, which was second on the grid. And we had, up until that point, we had a Chevy and a Ford on the front row, but with him gone, it made it a little bit of a Chevrolet fest in that first race. But fortunately, Tim Davis in his Corvette went after Jake Swan's Camaro and actually ended up getting past him. So they put on a good race, even though to be honest, they were quite a long way ahead of the rest of the field. And then they swapped positions on the Sunday. I wasn't there on Sunday, but they had a win apiece. So that was quite good. But there were just some really nice looking cars there. I particularly like John Young's Ford Mustang Castrol livery. And fair play to Matt Snowball as well, because apart from having a brilliant name, he's Plymouth Barracuda. Looks like the car that Swede Savage and Dan Gurney raced in the 1970 Trans Am, which is one of my sort of hidden favourites, really, in touring car history. So I was quite pleased to see those, I must admit.
Yeah, it's always nice to see something that breaks the mould a little bit, isn't it, in a race like that. And that Plymouth is, you certainly remember that. It stands out from the crowd.
Yeah. And what was also, I mean, they were all loud, but there was absolutely no relationship between how loud something was to how fast it was. There was one of the Corvettes in the middle of the pack that was unbelievably ear-splittingly loud when it came past. But anyway, there we go. I suppose I should probably talk about the main series that was there, which was obviously the Euro NASCAR series. And actually, in the end, Gianmarco Accoli, I mean, he won both races. In the first race, he was just one of those where the battles behind, he wasn't outright that much quicker than everyone else, but I was watching the lap times as he came. I was on the start finish straight, just banging in the lap times so consistently. I thought, yeah, that's quite impressive. And then actually it was a late race safety car, which gave Vittorio Girelli, who had finally worked his way into second place, a chance to have a go at him. But to be fair to Accoli, he just nailed the restart, and he just looked like he was in control the whole time. So not entirely surprised that he went out and won it on Sunday.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. It's an interesting field, isn't it, with a real mix of different drivers in it, coming from very different backgrounds. But there was a British driver that was also in the mix at the front as well.
Yeah, Jack Davidson got a podium in the first race. I have to say there was a little bit of fortune in that he made a good start and got himself up there, and then he was the cork in the bottle, which allowed Colley a little bit to escape. And then there was the restart. It all sort of kicked off people in the wrong places and going past each other and all that sort of stuff. And he ended up inheriting the podium when other people had penalties and things. But that, he was in the mix, so, you know, fair play to him. We should probably also mention that Paul Giffreau, I have no idea if I'm saying that correctly, he came into the weekend as championship lead. He had absolute shocker on the day I was there on Saturday. He had all sorts of problems, finished last, having been in the pits for a while. And he came out and grabbed a third place in the second race. So to keep him his championship chances going. So I think probably it was good to see something a bit different, I have to say. Brands Indy with big cars, even ones with, let's face it, quite extensive braking distances, overtaking was quite an effort. The order didn't really change too much apart from the restart. One race where the order did change constantly at every corner was the Legends. Just phenomenal to watch, honestly. So I took my kids there and a family who were actually going for one of the concerts, because I have to say the great thing about the event is there's so much to do. Like if you're racing diehard, like ignore all the rest of it. But obviously, if you've got people with you who perhaps aren't so used to lap charting and following cars around the racetrack, it is quite handy to have other things to go and do. So Terry Grant was there. They had Swamp Thing, the live action arena. We went and sat and watched that, and loud dragsters, and just the kids sort of loved all that sort of that side of things. But one race they did want to watch was the Legends, because they come round in a different order every time. and that added the added dimension of the quick guys coming through from the back, and you kind of, you just pick one and you go, right, where's that one going to get to? And one of them happened to have the Lightning McQueen livery, which my kids loved. So so they're like, right, where's he gonna get to? Tyler Reed, who was one of the quickest guys there the whole time. So yeah, so they were good fun. So they were probably my highlights before I got dragged off to do other non-racing things. But it was a good entertaining weekend. Very loud. I couldn't really hear what I was thinking or indeed what my kids were saying until I got away from both the concert and the racetrack. So if you like loud events, that's definitely one to go to.
And assault on all the senses then from all angles by the sounds of it.
No, I smell great as well. I must admit some of the old cars did smell great. The dragsters doing tyre burnouts in the live action arena, the burn rubber wasn't quite so keen on. But yes, some of the other smells were good. But I mean they know how to put on a show, so fair play to them. But yes, I was going to say from the sublime to the ridiculous. Perhaps it's the other way around, because you also had a meeting that we bigged up before the weekend at Silverstone.
Yes, this was the Equipe Summer Classic event, where it's on the Grand Prix circuit at Silverstone. It always attracts some big grids, and it didn't disappoint this year. And one of the highlights has to have been the special Sid Segal Trophy race for Austin Healey's. There was 42 Healey's on the grid, so it's quite a sight to see that number of cars, all from one make, all on the same grid. And it was a really, really close race that was only decided by 0.313 seconds. So it was the winning margin after the pit stop race. And it was won by Joe Wilmot narrowly over Jack and Ollie Chatham. And considering they are the sons of a bit of a Healey legend in John Chatham, so they wanted to try and uphold the family name, but couldn't quite get the win. It was a bit of a defensive masterclass from Joe Wilmot in the closing stages that kept his 3,000 just ahead of theirs. But it was a really close race. The grid was mainly comprised of 3,000, but there were some hundreds and also a few Sebring Sprites as well, for a little bit of variety. But overall, it was it sounds like a really good spectacle and a nice way to sort of honour one particular mark from the historic racing world.
Yeah, I should say that grandson of George Abacassis, Jonathan Abacassis, was there as well, wasn't it? I mean, he didn't have a very good day. It was the last classified finisher, and you can look at his lap times and see that that's not where he was on pace. He's won quite a few races in his Austin Healey 104. But yeah, a really impressive grid. We said before, didn't we, a one make series, you know, is it the sort of thing that you want to see in historics? But actually, when it's a kind of one-off thing like that, and you, especially when you get such a close finish as well, I mean, yeah, that's brilliant, isn't it? But it wasn't the only close finish, was it? I mean, oh, we have to mention them every time they appear somewhere, don't we? The mini Millias, they always put on a bit of a show.
Yes, definitely. We talked earlier about the Mini Coopers and the legends always being having dramatic races, but the Mini 7 Racing Club categories are exactly the same, and they did it once again at Silverstone. This time, the weather had a bit of an impact on the result, because the first race was featuring a very close battle for the lead between Aaron Smith and Rupert Deeth, two names for those who watch the Mini 7 races regularly will know they're always up at the front, and they had another close battle, but they were being caught by Ian Curley, who had opted for slicks, and that proved to be the right tyre by the end of the race, and he caught and passed both of them on the final lap to win by half a second. So it was as much as that. Well, yes, gargantuan in
that's several car lengths, surely.
So it was another really, really close race, and I believe then Curley doubled up in race two.
And any other highlights from the weekend from elsewhere that you wanted to quickly pick out? I know you've been ploughing through the reports before heading over to Le Mans 24 Hours. So poor old Steve, very busy again this week. But yeah, any other highlights that cropped up?
We also had the British Hill Climb Championship that was back in action again over the weekend at Shelsley Walsh. And that was another event where reigning champion Matt Ryder was tough to beat. So the wins were shared between Ryder and Alex Summers this time around. So he's still looking like, at the moment at least, the favourite to retain his title, but there's still obviously a long way to go in that season.
Yeah, and we need to make sure we get to one of those rounds, haven't we? We've promised ourselves a trip to. We should compare calendars and find a slot in there. But I'll try and leave the kids at home this time, perhaps so I can enjoy a bit more of the track action. I said that out loud. Thank you very much, Stephen Licorice, for picking out those highlights from the weekend. I mean, as you can hear there, you know, from V8 Thunder at Brands to minis at Thruxton to more minis and historic Austin Healey's at Silverstone, plus British Hill Climb Championship, lots to enjoy. If the listeners would like to get in touch, Stephen, to tell us what we should be talking about or other things we should discuss or look at with the national newsletter, what is the address they should be looking at?
It's the best one to use would be national@motorsport.com. Send us an email there if there's anything that you would particularly like to see us feature in the future.
Yeah, give us some ideas of what you might like us to waffle on about. We will try and get out and about to different events, and perhaps we'll get some of our national contributors in as well to talk about some of their highlights at some point later in the year. But that's it, I think, for this national podcast. Thank you very much again to Stephen Licorice. Thank you very much for tuning in. We'll be back soon with another All Sport podcast.